Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, folks. Welcome to a brand new episode of Thanks for the Knowledge. This is FanBite's weekly news show rounding up the headlines in games and entertainment in one handy podcast. I'm your host, head of FanBite Media, John Warren. Hope everyone has had a wonderful week. I'm about to take off on a 2-week vacation to Alaska. I'm very excited about doing that, but I have a great show for you before I set sail. I was able to catch a few minutes with Merritt Kay, who spent some time in Las Vegas last week to play the rebooted Saints Row. That was a great conversation, so stay tuned for that. But first, I've got to run you through this week's top stories. Minecraft is still one of the biggest games in the world, and this past week, Mojang, the developer of Minecraft, made it official that they will be blocking NFTs and blockchain from Minecraft. Good for them. They said they don't want to expose their users to potential fraud and other things. Of course, the folks that are really responsible for a major NFT project in Minecraft is a group called NFT Worlds. They wanted to basically bring NFTs to Minecraft in an evolving ecosystem. That group is very, very mad that Minecraft decided to do this, and in fact announced late this week that they will be developing their own game, their own platform, and they said the following. Quote, we're creating a new game and platform based on many of the core mechanics of Minecraft, but with the modernization and active development Minecraft has been missing for years. This is not a rewrite of some open source Minecraft clone, which would likely violate the EULA or still risk legal action. This is entirely from the ground up. This transition will additionally come with a public-facing brand identity change that is more player-friendly. And then later in the statement, they said this kind of wild thing. Quote, make no mistake, this is a Web 2 versus Web 3 battle. It is a battle between two different visions of the future of the web, one that prioritizes shareholder value and profit margins above all else, and one that prioritizes the spirit of innovation through independent creators. It is both a philosophical conflict over what the internet represents and a technological struggle over who will have ownership of digital assets. Microsoft has made it clear they will always act in the interest of their shareholders and balance sheet to the detriment of innovation, player experience, and creators. We believe an open, free, evolved version of what Minecraft brought to the world will be a better future for creators, developers, and ultimately gamers, end quote. So yeah, NFT Worlds is, I guess, going to make Minecraft 2. Now, whether you buy into that Web 2 versus Web 3 thing or, you know, whatever, I think we can agree that, yes, Microsoft and other large publishers and platform holders are always really acting in the interest of their shareholders and self-interest of making as much money as possible. Yes. But I would also not classify Web 3 as it exists right now as fundamentally something that prioritizes the spirit of innovation through independent creators. I'm not sure that's how I would classify what this is. And also, no one's actually talking about the exposure to fraud and other things that these NFT marketplaces have exposed folks to, as well as how absolutely unregulated and volatile those markets are. You know, as we've seen with a lot of closures recently of NFT marketplaces, of crypto-based lenders and exchangers, this market's kind of in a free fall right now, so I'm not sure I would agree with NFT Worlds about any of that stuff. But anyway, I guess I'll leave that up to you to make up your own mind. Moving on to another kind of multiverse, metaverse thing. Multiversus, the WB platform fighter, is getting LeBron James and Rick and Morty added to its roster. LeBron James got a character reveal at San Diego Comic-Con, not voiced by LeBron James. To be clear, but LeBron will don his Space Jam A New Legacy attire. He's got a basketball that he can throw at people and use as a weapon. He's got a dunk move, of course. And yeah, looks interesting to play with. I've still not gotten my hands on Multiverses. I probably should. It looks interesting, but I haven't played it yet. If you heard this past week, Danielle Riondo somewhere going, Yeah, yes. Then that means our favorite game, Into the Breach, is now officially out on iOS, on mobile devices. And it is, it's free for Netflix users on mobile. It's one of the best strategy games of its ilk. And it is truly, truly good. I don't know if it's 23 hours of playtime good, like Danielle Riondo has under her belt. But it is a very good game, and I think you should check it out if you never have. Nintendo did announce the dates for 3DS and Wii U eShop's closures. They will go away completely on March 27th of 2023. But between now and then, it's actually going to lose some functionality already. It'll be impossible. It's already impossible to add, use a credit card to add funds to those stores. You could still use eShop gift cards to buy games and content, but even that will be going away on August 29th. After August 29th, the only way you'll be able to get anything on those shops is through redeemable download codes, which is pretty wild. So you don't have a whole lot of time to buy stuff with gift cards, and you don't have a lot of time in general to pick up stuff on 3DS and Wii U eShops, which is a bummer. Our digital future is kind of a bummer. Pixar's creative director went on MinMax this past week to say that Toy Story was almost not given to Pixar as part of Kingdom Hearts. That was actually a protracted battle between a lot of different parties, and it took a lot of work and a lot of pitching to get Toy Story into the Kingdom Hearts franchise. Very funny. We would never have gotten that amazing image of Woody getting super serious and trying to hold Sora back and being like, I'm gonna fight him or whatever. I haven't played that, but yeah, it's a really funny, interesting story. Andrea Sheeran over on the website has some of those details. That MinMax interview is very, very good. So you should go check out MinMax, our buddies over at MinMax. They do great work. And yeah, hey, y'all remember when Discord, paired up with PlayStation? They announced this last year that PlayStation is going to bring Discord to its consoles to make communication between players a little easier. Well, that hasn't happened yet, but you know what has happened? Discord has signed another deal with Microsoft to bring Discord to Microsoft and Xbox consoles. Yeah, Xbox Wire had the news this week, and they're going to roll this out first for Xbox Insiders, and then in the coming weeks with a wider launch expected after that if everything goes well. So, yeah, if you're not super happy with voice chat on Xbox platforms, and I'm really not, Discord might be a breath of fresh air, and it's going to roll out for Insiders, very soon, and the rest of us soon thereafter. So that's pretty cool. Bruce Straley, the game director on The Last of Us and Uncharted 4, A Thieves' End, is announcing that he is going to found Wildflower Interactive, which is a new studio that is going to make small-ish, creatively charged, uniquely styled games, according to the website. So if you're into what folks that leave huge AAA games get up to next, you should definitely check out Wildflower Interactive. They have a YouTube video up. They have a website. He says that his last few years at Naughty Dog had a lot of burnout, and the studio has been known for issues with crunch, and those might have intersected quite a bit, and that's what caused Bruce Straley to take off. He left Naughty Dog back in 2017, so if you've missed his touch on the industry, then it looks like they're working on some cool stuff. Hey, speaking of The Last of Us, the game, at least the some of the visuals and things like that, were actually leaked this week. Quote unquote leaked. That's right. that we're talking about The Last of Us Part 1, which is the remake slash remaster of the game that came out originally in 2013 and then again in 2014. And yes, they were quote unquote leaked. And then Naughty Dog released a 10-minute video showcasing some of the new quote unquote features. That's mostly haptics and some of the visuals. But honestly, the best part was a lot of the accessibility stuff introduced in The Last of Us Part 2 that will be put into The Last of Us Part 1. So a lot of those things were absent. The video has a lot of those details. We put it over on the website for you. Ken Shepard has a blog post. You can watch the whole video there and read some of those details. But yeah, some haptics. Yeah, okay, cool. But most of the new stuff is going to be accessibility features. There also will be a permadeath mode, which is pretty wild, as well as a model viewer. And yeah, this game, you know, it looks a little bit better. Just as a brief aside, a lot of people were talking about how this was leaked and how that's like really upsetting. Like, we don't need to do the leak recourse, discourse for a game that came out in 2013. We don't need to do that. It came out 9 years ago. I understand that, like, it's a lot of hard work. People do. They want to control when it comes out. Okay, maybe it doesn't. If it's a brand new thing, I can kind of imagine that's frustrating. But people are talking about your thing anyway. It's the third time you've released the game. And people are talking about it. So I don't know. To me, Naughty Dog and a lot of the team and a lot of their biggest fans, they kind of talk about stuff in a way that drives me a little nuts. I just don't think we need to frame the conversations around leaking the way we are. I mean, I'm a little tired of the $70 discourse. People are like, oh, it's a cash grab. Yeah, it is. They think they can sell that thing for $70 again to the people who've already played it. And they're probably right. And sure, yeah, okay, it's a cash grab. But like, all capitalism is a cash grab. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe I'm just jaded. Maybe I should hang it up. I feel like I'm too cynical for this business at this point. Anyway, speaking of being cynical about this business, Persona 5 Royal will not allow you to upgrade to its PS5 upgrade for free, even if you own the PS4 version of Persona 5 Royal. Yeah, that's pretty disappointing news, but it really just solidified to me that I'll be playing Persona 5 Royal's upgrade probably on Switch or PC so I can put it on my Steam Deck. So that's really, you know, good on Sony for making that choice for me. I think that's like a pretty good call. I think that's it for the news. Yeah. All right. Yeah. That's about it for the news. That's about what's happened this week. Some narrative games that have come out lately. I tweeted about this earlier this week, and yeah, I feel like Until Dusk Falls and the Last of Us series, of course, and then Life is Strange and Horizon Forbidden West and Zero Dawn. There are a lot of games out there that kind of get lauded for their writing and for stories. Even Guardians of the Galaxy, a game that I thought did better than most of its peers in terms of writing and narrative design at the time. A lot of these things kind of get held up in a way that kind of frustrates me. Like, you know, we talk about things that are just extremely well written, or like, oh my gosh, like people just go online and gush about well fleshed out characters and these intricate stories. And I actually think we're kind of in a drought in terms of how good those stories and those characters and that writing actually is. I feel like we're actually missing more of a light, you know, not a light touch, but a surgical touch in terms of how these things are written. I think writers' rooms right now are not being properly taken care of in AAA games. I just feel like the bar is incredibly low right now. I don't mean to be dour. It's just something I've thought about recently. Like, I think if you really love Life is Strange and those games, like, I power to you. I think that's great. I just typically fire those things up, and I tend to find very shallow interactions and not very unique or interesting writing, or scenarios that don't ring really, really true or interesting to me. And maybe that's just me as a critic, like having very high standards. You know, it's like I don't just watch Marvel movies. I watch a lot of other films, too. And it's like I don't go into a Marvel movie and say, wow, that was really great writing, because that's not what I get from those movies. I get excitement and stuff like that. And I think I'm just seeing a trend of what feels like writers' rooms increasingly not having a wide net of what they're engaged with in terms of other media, like whether it be more niche games that have more nuanced writing, or film that, you know, doesn't necessarily take the shape of most of the kind of the geek-centric writing and story structure that so many of us are, you know, really plugged into right now. And so judgment, I mean, like we only have enough time in the day. Like if you want to watch superhero movies all day, every day, like I'm okay with that. Like I don't personally begrudge you, but I think if those folks are the ones that are controlling the narratives of a lot of our biggest video games in the medium, I do think we're missing, you know, I think we're missing something, right? I don't know. It's just something I thought about. Some folks asked about it on Discord, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit. I know it's kind of a detour. I know it's a little bit of like a piece of not super well-formed crit. It's basically saying, like, I don't think writing in games is that good right now. But that's essentially, you know, that's essentially where I am. And then it just got me thinking. I think, you know, if you're really into Until Dusk Falls, that's cool. I haven't played it yet, so I fully admit I'm only going into that piece of criticism, seeing very little of the game through like playthroughs and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just an interesting time for games, and games writing and narrative development. And I don't know. I think it could be better. What do you think? Go to fanbyte.casa. Tell me what you think about games narratives. If I'm totally off base, if you're like, no, John, come on, you're just being like a super try hard and you want to impress people with your hoity toity writing opinions. I don't think that's true. I actually don't even think I'm that hoity toity. I just think I think our standards for the stuff need to be just slightly higher. That's all. All right, let's take a break. On the other side of that break, we'll talk to Merritt about Saints Row, the reboot, and her time in Las Vegas. Hey, folks, just interrupting the show to give you an update on a section of our website that I love very, very much that is unfortunately ceasing publication sometime in September. It is FanFight, our wrestling vertical that Colette Arend runs so masterfully. It is our professional wrestling coverage. It is so good. It is unlike anything else on the internet. An internet obsessed with results and rumors and rampant speculation and fantasy booking and just kind of, I don't know, the dirt worst aspects of professional wrestling. We don't do that. Colette is running an amazing section for wrestling writing, for wrestling analysis, for retrospectives, for humor. It's really unlike anything on the internet. We are ceasing publication just because we have to, you know, kind of shift our focus and, you know, probably focus exclusively on games for a little while as this industry continues to be incredibly unstable this year. And yeah, I fully intend to bring the FanFight section back. In the meantime, you can support Colette and FanFight's kind of legacy over on her Patreon. That is patreon.com/ColetteArend. That's patreon.com/ColetteArend, Colette Arend. You can support her right now. She's going to start putting some of the content that was going to go up on the site starting in August and then more of it in September. So we're going to go out with a bang. There's a lot of amazing stuff for FanFight coming down the pipe. You can go to fanfight.com/wrestling and it's all right there. It's an amazing section. Please give it your love and support while it winds down, and please support Colette's amazing angles and coverage of professional wrestling on her Patreon. That's patreon.com/ColetteArend. Super bummed to be doing this. It's absolutely my least favorite part of running any website or any sort of organization. Sometimes you have to make very tough calls And they bum me out a lot because I love professional wrestling. I love the way Colette covers it, and I am happy that we were able to run with it as long as we did. So please go give that section some love, give Colette some love, follow her over on Patreon and on Twitter, and thanks so much for your support over the years. Back to the show. You all know that classic phrase, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Well, we're changing the damn thing. It's what happens in Vegas gets written about, posted online, and then gets talked about on a podcast. That's right, folks. I'm talking to Merritt Kay this week. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
It's great. How'd you like that intro? Like, if you got to give
it was
like a number, one through 10.
Triple sevens, baby.
Thank you. Jackpot. So you were in Las Vegas last week to play a build of the new Saints Row reboot.
That is correct. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. It's sort of the first time that in my relatively short career as a games journo, mm-hmm. that anyone has flown me out somewhere to see one thing.
Right.
Like, I've been to E3, I've been to PAX and stuff, but this was just like, hey, we've got this new game and we want to show it to you. We want to woo you. With our, Vegas hotel takeover and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. I played like 4 hours of it.
How did you, just real quick, like, not to put you in an unprofessional spot. You know, how did that feel to be kind of courted by a PR machine and flown out? Like, how was that?
It's weird. Uh-huh. It is a little bit weird because it's the kind of thing that I feel like used to happen a lot before YouTube and Twitch existed.
Yeah.
We have people on staff who have been around for a lot longer than I have. So people like Emron will talk about this kind of thing just happening all the time in the 2000s and early 2010s.
Yeah.
And then, influencers start to become more of a thing as social media becomes the way that we use the internet in the 2010s. And, from a PR perspective, I don't blame PR people for thinking, we can just like give an influencer, someone who isn't beholden to like a team of, or like any kind of like code of ethics necessarily. Not to say that influencers are nefarious or venal, but I just think from a PR perspective it makes more sense to say, I'm gonna target influencers because they have a direct line mm-hmm. to fans, they have kind of a trustworthiness, and also I don't have to jump through all the hoops of dealing with an organization.
So
that stuff doesn't really happen as much as it used to. Obviously, huge sites still get that treatment, but this was my first time with that, and it was a little bit strange just being in this spot with all of these other journalists from all these other sites. And because, you have the PR team on the one hand, and then you have the devs, and then you have sort of the publisher as well. So these, three different teams of people who are all invested in you sort of having a good time with the game. And also, I think more generally, just sort of having a good time throughout the weekend, because that's going to maybe color your impressions of the product that they want you to like.
Yeah. In that regard, how was Vegas? Because that was your first time visiting there.
It's my first time in Vegas. It was, that city shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
By all rights. And I'm fascinated by that because anytime people do something that is just like Tower of Babel level of hubris, I'm like, this is interesting. You crossed the Rockies, but then didn't want to go to where the water was. You just stopped there and were like, this is where we do it. This is where we build the city. It was weird. I'm East Coast. Northeast mainly, so I'm not used to the heat, I'm not used to the dryness, I'm not used to a lot of things, but it was cool. I didn't have a lot of time to see the sights. I did hit up the Pinball Hall of Fame while I was there. I wrote about that.
Very cool.
Which was an extremely cool place. And, you know, if you're in Vegas and you're a person who isn't into gambling and all that stuff, but you are into games, you definitely want to hit that place up. I did see a bit of a couple of casinos. We went out to eat at Bobby Flay's restaurant because, and that was not a PR thing. That was just someone else that was there. Her dad happened to know the head chef.
Of course.
Who also was the Vegas cake boss.
So,
I'm going to put her on blast. Alyssa Mercante over at Games Radar. Not on blast. It's good. So because she got us a table at this place, and that was really cool.
I
would like to go back sometime to Vegas, not necessarily that restaurant, although it was good, but, it's fascinating. It's a wild, weird place.
I think my every fiber of my being, when I see like a big flashy restaurant owned by a TV chef, I'm like, no. Mm-hmm. My experience has actually been in Vegas. Those are pretty good. Like those are like some of the better places to eat. I don't know. The place is so strange.
Very odd. Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been. The last time I went, it was the week of my birthday, which is in July. So that was like just a huge mistake to like go out and just enjoy a place when it was like 112 degrees outside. So, there's like a roller coaster at the New York, New York. There are like so many things that I think
there's a lot
try.
Of stuff inside that shouldn't or typically aren't inside. I was trying to find a bathroom at one point in Bally's at like midnight or so. And I walked down this hallway where the ceiling had been painted to look like the sky.
I'm very familiar with that.
You couldn't tell like what time it was where you were.
Oh, not being able to tell what time it is. That's the Las Vegas special. Yeah.
Right. That's what they want. Right. Because they want you to keep gambling out, you know, people coming with free drinks and stuff.
Yep.
Very, very carefully calibrated. Talk about like, you know, we talk a lot in games about the ways that developers of live games, especially and gacha games, try to manipulate, you know, behavioral stuff to try to get you to keep playing. Talk about people who have that down.
Mm-hmm.
They're years ahead of us.
Yeah, they do everything to manipulate your senses into being like, yeah, I guess I could just go back into that casino and do something, huh?
Throw some dice. Very hands of blackjack.
Yeah, very weird place. All right, let's talk about the reason for the season. You played about 4 hours of Saints Row. First of all, I'll just ask, like, what's your experience with the Saints Row franchise up to this point?
Yeah, so I played 3, 4, and the somewhat maligned Gat Out of Hell.
Yeah.
So I played through all of those. I never really played the first or second.
Right.
I think I just didn't. At the time, maybe just didn't own the consoles they were on or something.
Yeah.
And also, they never didn't really appeal to me because those games were... The first one was more straightforwardly a GTA clone,
yes.
I think. The second one, they started to develop a voice and a direction for it. I think that one is a lot of people's, like, you know, first exposure to the series. And I love 3 and 4. I thought at the time that 4 came out, I thought it was actually, like, one of the smartest mainstream Western games that had come out in a long time.
Yeah.
Just because of the ways that it skewered a lot of the design decisions that were common at that time. So, this is the early 2010s. So BioWare is
right.
Like can basically do no wrong at this point until you get to Mass Effect 3 and the ending and people turn on them. But they had that really clever thing in 4, I thought, of, there being a romance button that you just press and then, your character and the other character it just fades to black and you just do your thing, which I felt was a really funny deconstruction of the whole like build up of the romance mechanics in BioWare games. And also just, you know, having superpowers in 4 was great because it really reminded me of like Prototype or like the Hulk game on the original Xbox. I love open world city games where there is verticality.
Sure.
Because I feel like what can happen so often is like, you know, cities are very dense vertical spaces, but if you can't go into the buildings, you're not seeing like 90% of the real estate.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So I 3 and 4 are up there for me. And I did also play God Out of Hell a few years after that. You know, maybe not as good, but they tried something different.
They tried something. Sure. So, all right. So what did you play during this period? Right. So it was about 4 hours. Was it kind of near the beginning of the game? What was your experience?
Yeah. So I started right from the beginning. There was sort of an intro part that I can't really talk about, but there's, you know, a bunch of cutscenes, and then it just sort of drops you into your first day on the job. You're the boss because it's Saints Row. You're not the same boss as the previous games because it's a reboot. So you are a character who is starting their first day as a part of Marshall Defense Forces, I believe, or Industries, which is basically like a private security company.
Love that.
Yeah, no, it's a fun idea. You know, there's always been this sort of like these factions in Saints Row games that are like militarized police forces.
Right.
So you don't start off, you know, as a leader of a gang. You start off as kind of a grunt working this not great job.
Mm-hmm.
And I played through the first 10 or so missions, which basically take you up to deciding to like start your own gang.
Yeah.
Because the way that the game sets it up is your character, the boss, is lives with three other roommates, Nina, Kevin, and do not remember the last guy's name. So basically like you all are working for different gangs, but they're all kind of giving you a raw deal. And as Eli is the last guy. He wears a bow tie, and his thing is that he's not a gang guy, but he's like, he wants to make money. Like he's an investor.
Right.
Kevin is a perpetually shirtless DJ / cook. And Nina is like the car expert. Kind of gave me like a Kinsey vibe from the previous games.
Oh, sure.
So you all decide like, okay, we're all getting a raw deal. We should go into business for ourselves. Because you get fired during the events of the intro missions. And so I saw basically up to that part, which I feel like that was kind of like the intro. Then the game probably opens up a lot more after that with they're talking about these criminal enterprise systems where you can, you know, start doing the stuff like insurance fraud from the previous games. But it was fairly on rails to that point. There are side missions and stuff that I did a few of those as well. Like it seems like the first few hours of the game are just sort of dedicated to setting up this like new Saints Row world.
Right. And it does kind of take place in a desert environment, right?
That's right. It's called Santo Ileso. So I think that's supposed to be, I think it's like a southwestern, like a fictional southwestern city.
Yeah, I want to say in the very, like in the announcements, they said something about getting a lot of their stuff from El Paso, which is interesting.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but I don't know if they stuck with that or not. But yeah, it kind of looks like it.
Yeah. So it's, you know, a lot of desert. There are, you know, there is like a downtown. There are skyscrapers, towers, that kind of thing. Fairly like varied kind of terrain, which is cool.
Yeah.
One thing that did stand out to me, unfortunately, was that it feels dated. The open world it's cliche at this point, but you know, Breath of the Wild really did change a lot. Feel like about open world design philosophy in games. And it feels like a Saints Row game from 10 years ago. Mm. Again, you're in a city primarily. So a lot of the real estate of that environment is locked off to you because, you know, it's hard to kind of make an open world where you have buildings that have fully fleshed out interiors and people in them and things to do in them. So most of the buildings, like in older open world city-based games, are, you know, just blocked off terrain.
Blocked off. Yep.
And what that means is you do a lot of driving kind of just back and forth to get missions.
Right.
Which is something that I had totally forgotten about that kind of thing. Because again, it's like, I hate going back to Breath of the Wild constantly, but
yeah,
that's a game where it didn't feel like you were doing a lot of busy work running back and forth.
It was always getting interrupted by something, like,
exactly,
you know, your own curiosity, or you could choose to basically cut out a lot of that stuff if you wanted to with fast travel. Yeah, there's not a lot of wasted space in that game at all.
Right, right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. Whereas, you know, in Saints Row, you know, you'll start a mission and it'll be like, all right, go to this place where you have to steal this car or where you have to meet this person. And it's like, yeah, okay, so I have to drive across the city. And you can unlock fast travel points, I think, but I didn't, you know, do any of those because I think you have to do kind of side missions to get them. But it was just like, okay, so I'm just driving. And the problem is, like, there are games where getting places is enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And to bring up a, you know, Breath of Wild, obviously that goes without saying, but you know, a game like, even a game like Monster Hunter Rise, which isn't open world, but does have these fairly big maps, that lets you unlock fast travel points. But it also, like, is kind of just fun to, like, use the wire bug to run up walls, to get on your dog and ride around, things like that. Whereas in this, it's like, okay, so I find a car and I drive through the streets until I finally get there. And on the way there, like, nothing much is happening.
Yeah.
The people are kind of wandering around saying the same lines over and over. You can, like, run into a cop, and if they're going somewhere else, or they just ignore you. So it's, there's not a lot of, like, emergent events happening.
Okay. Yeah, that's feels like kind of a like lifted whole cloth from how these games exactly played, like you said, like 10 years ago or more. I mean, that's a problem that GTA 5 didn't really solve. That's a problem that Red Dead Redemption 2, like, for all of its touted kind of mission design, it still was kind of like, once you start a mission, you're on kind of these rails to do it. And there's nothing really super interesting or emergent that happens in between those things. You know, to Rockstar's credit, a lot of the peripheral stuff that, like, doesn't start as a quote unquote mission is fairly interesting. Like, you can stumble onto interesting stuff, but I don't know if that's ever been Saints Row's forte. I don't know.
Yeah, not terribly. I mean, for me, Saints Row mainly has been about the characters and kind of the over the top,
like, big bold mission design too.
Just exactly. Got, like, yeah. And there is some of that. I will say, like, there is, you know, in the first 4 hours, like, the most memorable mission for me is this one where when you're still working for Marshall, you're supposed to tail this convoy that's heading into the desert.
Okay.
And you can do kind of a cool thing in this one where you can, you know, if you're riding shotgun, you can climb out onto the roof of the car.
Oh,
and that lets you basically pull out larger weapons that you couldn't otherwise sort of fit through the window.
Oh, that's
it does
cool.
make you more vulnerable, though. So there's a bit of a trade off. And that was cool because, like, you know, you're driving down this, like, kind of desert valley, you're leaping from car to car, you're getting further up. The problem is that so much of the really exciting stuff is automated. It's like, you know, the car pulls up close enough to the next car and you just press A and then it plays a canned animation of you jumping over.
Okay.
So there's a lot of, like, early 2010s Western game design philosophy here of, like, a lot of quick time events. Lot of cool set pieces that you're not actually really doing much during.
Interesting.
I don't know. Like, I guess I haven't played, like, a ton of these kinds of games in the last few years. Like, I don't know if that is still a thing. But coming off games like Elden Ring and the Dark Souls series, it's so much harder for me to stomach that stuff now.
Right.
Yeah. Cause it's like, I could just be watching a movie. Like, yeah. the other thing is too, is, like, they did this reboot, and I can see why they did that because, They went very big in four. They blew up the Earth. They went into space. They went into the Matrix. They got a time machine. It just got really, really silly. And then, you know, get out of hell. You've got Johnny Gat, like, literally in hell fighting Satan. So, like,
yeah.
Okay. I can see they want to pull it back a little. They want it to be a little more Fast and Furious, a little less.
It's like, where do you go after Super Mario Galaxy? Well, I guess he's got a fucking hat and he's back on Earth. All right, cool. Yeah.
So I understand why they did that. Yeah. The problem is, I feel like to me right now, it's like, okay, it would be maybe okay if the design was dated, if it still had a lot of that, like, trademark Saints Row.
If it had that charm,
flavor to it.
Everybody was really attached to the characters, especially from 3, I feel like.
And they're, like, great characters. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, like Shawnee, I mean, Keith David.
Right.
Just like, yeah, it was a lot of fun. The characters in this one, like, obviously I didn't have that much time with the game. It was like a few hours.
Yeah.
I didn't, like, really care about them that much after that. Maybe they improve and they get more interesting, but, like, one of the problems I feel like with the tone is they've gone for this sort of, like, weirdly socially conscious kind of angle that I feel like doesn't really fit the series at all.
Right.
And it makes sense as a motivation for the characters. Like, you want to see them go from being scrappy to running an empire, right? Like, I get that. But, like, just the constant, like, quips of, like, oh, I got to pay my student loans. Oh, are we going to make rent? Oh, you don't have health insurance. We can't go to the hospital. And it's like, okay, those would fit in, like, a more serious kind of narrative. Like, if it's exploring that stuff, then sure, I guess. But it's not. It's still kind of wacky. And it's like, okay, this just is kind of a downer and kind of, like, boring. Like, I want these characters to be amoral sociopaths. Like, I don't want them to, you know, be like, oh, I gotta make my student loan payments.
Well, especially it's like, in the moment, they'd be like, oh, I gotta make my student loan payments. And then in the gameplay world, you can choose to pull out a bazooka and just like blow up a restaurant or whatever.
Right.
It's it is kind of a weird fit of, like, wow, like, the world sure is messed up. Anyway, I'm going to drive my car through a stadium. Like, I don't know. It doesn't really work to me. Yeah.
It's an odd juxtaposition.
Yeah.
And again, like, I like Volition. Like, I'm willing to.
Sure.
I will probably still try to play this.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what August, September looks like in terms of releases.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, I feel like, yeah, there's a lot of odd choices that went into this. And there is some cool stuff. I will say, like, in terms of gameplay, there is some newish stuff that I like. There's so, like, in the previous games, like, you sort of get abilities as you level up, and usually you have to, like, spend money to do that. The first ability you unlock is, like, a grenade ability, but instead of just throwing a grenade, you grab the nearest enemy, you throw a grenade down their pants, and then you sort of, like, hurl them at a crowd of enemies, and they all explode. So
Sure.
That's sort of that Saints Row flavor.
Yeah.
They've tried to make the vehicles more interesting, because I do think one of the criticisms of 4 was that being able to, you know, run super fast and jump and stuff made cars basically superfluous.
Yeah.
And they're trying to, you know, bring that back into the picture. So when you're driving, you can hit a button and the control stick to do, like, a quick jolt to the left or right.
Uh-huh.
As, like, a side swipe move that makes a lot easier to sort of throw off other cars rather than trying to just use the steering controls to do that.
Yeah.
The driving itself, like, I don't know that it's going to blow anyone away.
Sure.
There's, you know, as far as I can tell, there's no multiple camera angles or anything. You're basically locked into the chase view. But, you know, after having played, like, Forza and some of the other big racing games that have come out this year. Obviously, it's not like mainly a racing game. There's a lot of other stuff going on. But like they are trying to bring the cars back in. Okay. And I'm not sure that they feel like amazing right now.
Yeah.
They feel fine.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, cool. I mean, you played a bit with the Creation Suite before this, I believe, also? Or did you not do that?
I didn't touch the Boss Factory before going here.
Yeah.
Or before going to the event. But yeah, that tool, they did make that tool public. And tried to go through it fairly quickly just because I knew that it had already been released. Yeah, so I just made a green guy who kind of looked like Shrek.
I think the developers enjoyed that because
they were hanging out behind me, sort of watching me make Shrek do weird little emotes, kind of creeping through the desert with no shirt on. So the character creation tools are cool. You can do stuff like you can create an asymmetrical face, which I'm sure Monster Factory crew is going to have a good time with. Yep. You can do prosthetics now, which is something that I think I saw for the first time in Forza. I'm sure other games have done it before that, but last year, I think that was the first time I'd seen that done. And so there's a lot of different options there. There are some things that I feel like they removed. Like, it doesn't seem like there is like accessories, and like, I don't know if you can layer stuff in the same way that you could in previous games, like with clothing and things like that. But yeah, I mean, as character creators go, it's pretty cool. It has a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
And people have already made some really whack stuff with it. So so that's cool. And there is, you know, there is like online co-op, which was fun in previous Saints Row games, just doing stuff like, you know, one person getting on a motorcycle and the other person riding in the back and just driving around the city. It's not massively multiplayer. I did talk to the EP briefly on that trip, and he said that they had discussed it early on in development, but just, you know, I think that the technical challenges and the fact that this was a reboot, I guess they wanted to focus more on establishing the world and stuff. I mean, I think that those comparisons are going to be invited, unfortunately, with GTA Online, because game has become, you know, like you brought up GTA 5 before, and like, yeah, that game didn't really reinvent the wheel. And I mean, you know, a lot of people still loved it because people love GTA.
Yeah.
But I think online has really just like changed the entire game when it comes to like, if you have an open world that isn't that exciting on its own, but then you add other people into the mix, there's going to be wild stuff that happens. So I'll be really interested to see if this game gets any kind of mods that sort of open up some of those possibilities.
Yeah. Cause at this point, I think it's like, I don't know if it's like a very strong expectation, but like, I feel like it, you know, you have a big open world modern game. I do feel like the GTA Online crowd is probably going, well, okay, why would I flock over here?
Exactly.
Unless I can do this. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure.
Anything else? Any other takeaways from the weekend that you were either excited or kind of bummed by?
I mean, I think there is some wackier stuff that I didn't get to.
Because
they did send me a bunch of screenshots, and one of them does have a hover bike in it.
That's fun.
And there are side missions where you have a wingsuit where you're like dropping out of a helicopter and sort of gliding around. So there is kind of that element of like, you can unlock these towers that let you sort of launch yourself into the air and glide around. So that's sort of maybe a Breath of the Wild inspired type thing. it's a preview. I played 4 hours of what is probably like a 30-hour game.
I
don't want to like say it's, you know, it looks terrible or whatever. I think I was a little bit disappointed just based on the direction that it seemed to be headed in.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I want to give it a chance. I don't know, maybe we will learn more in the next few weeks leading up to launch.
Yeah. Well, we will, we'll definitely keep an eye on it. It's one of those games that like, one of those franchises that some people just really, really, really love. I definitely, Did not love 3 and 4 that much, but I enjoyed jumping in with Nikki recently and doing RKOs on people, just random wrestling moves and things like that. I think if this is a real reboot and kind of a reset to that Saints Row 2 kind of vibe, then I'll definitely be interested in what comes after that. You know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, no, I'm still intrigued by it. They've still got some of the best instincts, I think, in terms of character creation, on the market. And I think that's compelling enough to at least get me to run around a bit in the desert. Okay, Merritt, thank you so much for chatting with me. And
anytime.
We'll have to all go to Vegas. We should all plan that. Yes. I think that'd be fun.
Maybe not in July.
Vegas. Not in July. Yeah, but that would be great. All right, thanks. You know, since I'm taking a little while off from work and also this show, I figured why not look at, you know, games that are coming out in the next few weeks, not just the one ahead. There's some good stuff to look at. So let's start with Story of Seasons, Pioneers of Olive Town. Yeah, that's coming to PlayStation 4 on July 26th. That game is already out for Nintendo Switch and PC. So you should, check out reviews for the game if you want to know how it plays on PlayStation 4. There's Octopath Traveler, Champions of the Continent. It's a mobile game coming to iOS and Android on July 27th. That's very exciting for folks that like that series. Bear and Breakfast is an amazingly cute indie game coming to PC on July 28th. Definitely check that out. Lost Epic is coming to PC, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5. It's an action game coming to those platforms on July 28th. We have Digimon Survive. Oh, yeah. Big new Digimon game coming out. It's a strategy game coming out on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and PC. That's July 29th. And also on July 29th, we have the big one. It's Xenoblade Chronicles 3 coming to Nintendo Switch. That should be a big one. It should probably have a lot of stuff up on our website if you want to go check that out. That's one of the biggest RPGs of the year, and we no doubt will be talking about it quite a bit on 99 Potions, our RPG podcast. Starting in August, we got South of the Circle. That's coming to basically every platform you can imagine, except for like Google Stadia. That is an adventure game, and it came out on iOS actually a couple years ago, but it's coming to PlayStation 5, 4, Xbox Series X, NAS, Xbox One, Switch, and PC on August 3rd. On next day, on August 4th, we have Turbo Golf Racing, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC. It's a racing game, but it's also got a ball hitting kind of mechanic. It looks kind of interesting. Thymesia comes to Xbox Series X and S, PlayStation 5, and PC on August 9th. That's an action title. Two Point Campus, that's one that some folks have their eye on PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and PC. That's a Sega Europe joint publishing a sim game. Looks very interesting. If you like Two Point Hospital, this is kind of the same thing, but you know, campus. Lost in Play comes to Switch and PC on August 10th. That's an adventure game. Cult of the Lamb, something that I am very excited to get my hands on. That's a Devolver Digital joint coming on PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC on August 11th. Rumbleverse is a melee battle royale game. It's gotten a lot of early access buzz. It's on the Epic Games Store on PC, but also on PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, and Xbox One. That's also August 11th. Marvel's Spider-Man, an excellent action adventure game, is coming to PC on August 12th. So that really covers us from the end of July to about mid-August. Lots of nice little games there. I've definitely got my eyes on Rumbleverse, Cult of the Lamb, and of course, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. And hey, if you're into Digimon, it's a brand new Digimon game. I love Digimon. That's about it for what's coming out over the next few weeks. Some good ones. Yeah, let me know what you're playing. We got a great Discord community over at fanbyte.casa. There's a thanks for the knowledge tab right there. You should go click on it and tell me what you're playing. Tell me what you're looking forward to over the next few weeks. I'll be checking in while I'm on my vacation. So, yeah. That is going to do it for this week's episode of TFTK. I want to thank my guest, Merritt Kay, for stopping by, talking to me about Vegas, talking to me about Saints Row. That was a great conversation. Thanks again, Merritt. You can find her writing all over fanbyte.com. She also hosts Channel F over on the Fanbyte Podcast Network. It's a really great show. You can also find her on Twitter at Merritt Kay. Thanks so much to Paul for producing another excellent episode of this program. You can find him over at PaulieMayo on Twitter.com. And he also was on 99 Potions this past week talking about Stray. That was a great episode. Go check it out. You can find me at Floppy Adult. You can find Fanbyte at Fanbyte Media. Again, I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks. Don't burn the house down while I'm gone. There's money on the counter to get pizza. And there's plenty of soda and stuff in the fridge. So, until next time, you're welcome.